भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिके ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Welcome back. So, continuing from Canto 9, Chapter 9, this is text 16 and 17, because the two verses only 16 is on the board. Shruto Bhagiratha Jagne Tasya Nabho Paro Bhavat Sindhu Dvipastatas Tasmad अयुतायुस्ततो भवत् श्रुतो भगीरथा जज्ञे तस्य नाभो परो भवत् सिन्धुद्वीपस्ततस्तस्माद् अयुतायुस्ततो भवत् श्रुतो भगीरथा जज्ञे तस्य नाभो परो भवत् सिन्धुद्वीपस्ततस्तस्माद् अयुतायुस्ततो भवत्। Shruta, a son named Shruta, Bhagirathat, from Bhagiratha, Jagne was born, Tasya of Shruta, Nabha, by the name Nabha, Aparaha, different from the Nabha previously described, Abhavat, was born, Sindhudvipa, by the name Sindhudvipa, Tataha, from Nabha, Tasmat, from Sindhudvipa, Ayutayuhu, a son named Ayutayu, Tataha, thereafter, Abhavat, was born, Rituparnaha, a son named Rituparna, Nalasakaha, who was a friend of Nala. Yaha, one who, Ashwavidyam, the art of controlling horses, Ayat, achieved. Nalat, from Nala. Dattva, after giving in exchange. Akshahrudayam, the secrets of the art of gambling. Cha, and Asmai, unto Nala. Sarvakamaha, by the name Sarvakama. Tu, indeed, Tat Sutam, his son, the son of Rituparna. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagiratha had a son named Shruta, whose son was Nabha. The son was different from the Nabha previously described. Nabha had a son named Sindhudvipa. From Sindhudvipa came Ayutayu, and from Ayutayu came Rituparna, who became a friend of Nalaraja. Rituparna taught Nalaraja the art of gambling, and Nalaraja gave Rituparna lessons in controlling and maintaining horses. The son of Rituparna was Sarvakama. Purport. Gambling is also an art. Kshatriyas are allowed to exhibit this talent in this art of gambling. By the grace of Krishna, the Pandavas lost everything by gambling and were deprived of their kingdom, wife, family, and home because they were not expert in the gambling art. In other words, a devotee may not be expert in materialistic activities. It is therefore advised in the Shastra that materialistic activities are not at all suitable for the living entities, especially the devotees. A devotee should therefore be satisfied to eat whatever is sent as prasad by the Supreme Lord. A devotee remains pure because he does not take to sinful activities such as gambling, intoxication, meat eating, and illicit sex. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Welcome back. Nice to see you, Anastasia. Acharnishta, welcome back. I'm sure you have some wonderful adventures and realizations from the road. Nice to see you. In describing the lineage of the Ikshvaku dynasty, we've been hearing stories or pastimes of certain great personalities, starting with Ambarish Maharaj and then his descendants. Actually, Ambarish Maharaj's father's name was Nabha. Coming down the lineage, then there are certain persons about whom we hear. We come to King Sagara. From King Sagara, his 60,000 sons, Anshuman, Dilipa, and Bhagirath, who brought the Ganges into this earthly realm. It's a very fascinating story we've been hearing. And from this verse on, the story continues. The narration of Shukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj is continuing. And he says, Bhagiratha had a son. His name was Shruta. And then Shruta had his son who was Nabha. And he says, it's a different Nabha from, you know, like in traditions, we have people naming their children after their great-grandfather or grandfather, right? At least in America, we have such and such junior, such and such the third, right? I haven't heard such and such the fourth and fifth, but lately still third I've heard it. But we have King James the seventh, the eighth, and names like that. Why do you put a number? To say that this one is different from that one. And in other traditions, they name the grandchildren or great-grandchildren after their grandparents or great-grandparents. They have some middle name or first name like that, in recognition and respect for that ancestor. So his name was Nabha. And Nabha had a son, Sindhudvipa. From him came Ayutayu. And from Ayutayu came Rituparna. As described, that Rituparna has a friend, Nala. And friends, at least in our childhood, we're used to exchanging with each other what we had and what the other didn't have and we wanted from them. Baseball cards. I have this. What do you have? Okay, I'll give you one of this. Can I get one of that? When we were children, we used to trade with each other different things because I wanted something that he has. And he had something that I had. So we would trade, right? We're always children, they trade with each other. And when we grow up in life, this whole concept of trade is such. There is one party there, there's one party here. They want something, and we want something. That's how the concept of business and trade started. Of course, business is all about you give services in return for money. But previously, trade was you exchange goods. Oh, you're a farmer, you have a lot of wheat, I have a lot of vegetables. I'll give you some of my vegetables, I'll take some of your grain. And there would be some way, it's called barter system, some way we'd exchange with each other goods and services. So because these two were friends, they had a little exchange. Oh, I'll teach you how to take care and control the horses. Oh, great. I'll teach you gambling. So, Nala learnt gambling from Rituparna, and Rituparna learnt how to control and take care of horses. And then he goes on, the son of Rituparna was Sarvakama. And keeps going from there. Text 18 says, Sarvakama had a son named Sudasa, whose son was also known as Sudasa, the husband of Damayanti. Sometimes Sudasa is known as Mitrasaha or Kamala, Kalmaspada, Kalmashpada. And because of his own certain activities, Vasishta cursed him. So he's going to ask him, what happened? Why did Vasishta curse Kalmashpada? So as they're going through the story, Prabhupada's interjecting a little insight for us. And he says first that gambling is also an art. I don't remember the 64 arts, but in the Krishna book, it is described that there are 64 arts. I'm sure music, or singing, dancing, playing of instruments, the art of drama and all that. Prabhupada says gambling is also an art. And Krishna learnt all 64 arts, which no human being can ever learn all 64 arts. They may learn one or two or three or four in their entire lifetime. But Krishna went to Sandipani Muni's school and learnt all the 64 arts in 64 days. So he joined school and in 2 months graduated, literally. He knew all the 64 arts like that. I mean, how is it possible? It's not that he's learning, he already is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he became proficient in all 64 arts in 64 days. So he learnt gambling as an art. So I'm going to ask you, why is gambling considered an art? What is the art here? Deceiving? Okay. Bluffing. Okay. That's is gambling about deception and bluffing. Calculating. What are you calculating? Gain versus loss. You raised your hand. Did you just raise your hand to say no? So gambling is an art of calculating the odds of your winning and the odds of their winning without knowing what they have in their hand. So generally we think of gambling with these cards, okay? But whether it is cards or the roulette or any type of game, it's all about calculating probability. As soon as we enter school, right, and I think in middle school math, actually high school math, because middle school they just teach probability. I have a bag of red marbles, I have a bag of blue marbles. What's the probability that I'll pick a red marble? This is just simple probability. But when you come to high school math, they teach you probability with cards. Okay, so it never says that Krishna played cards, but let's get an idea. Okay, I'm not an expert at cards. I only know the first few basics, and then my ignorance shines forth. So the deck of cards has how many? 52. Okay. And in 52, the probability of any card is 1 over 52. Right? So a person who gets a certain number of cards, they look at it, and they look at the face of the opponent, and they try to understand, with these cards, what's my probability of winning? And they try to gauge, according to the behavior of the other person, what's their probability of winning? That's why they have this game of poker, the phrase poker face. They sit as if they have the worst cards with the best cards in their hand, because the idea is that whoever wins takes home the entire money or stash or whatever they have wagered. So gambling is all about calculating one's odds of winning and putting something that they have at risk and trying to make the best of winning at it. And that's an art. Art of being able to calculate one's risk or assess one's risk and take that risk for winning more. It requires a good, sharp, fast calculating brain. And so whether it is a game of cards, whether it's the rolling of dice, whether it's the roulette, whether it's the stock market, whether it is trading in futures and commodities, the whole idea is, can a person assess all the other factors, environmental factors, this thing, that thing, and assess what's the risk and whether or not they want to take that risk? And it requires a good calculating brain, not just, oh, it seems very nice. Others are telling me it's a good stock to put in and I'm going to put my money in. It's more than that. So this ability to assess the risk by looking at many, many factors and calculating it is an art. It's not easy. And so Kshatriyas were taught this. Although they were taught through a game of dice, the idea was that when they are conquering kingdoms and they are doing this and that, they should be able to assess, what is the strength of the enemy? What are my strengths? What is the risk here, etc. And that is why gambling and the Kshatriya art of fighting go together in one sense, because you wouldn't take on a war without assessing your risk. So then Prabhupada says gambling is an art. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Dyutam Chalayatam Aham. And the whole art of gambling, in addition to assessing the risk is how to trick or cheat your opponent. And the cheating of the opponent is you always tell the opponent that you are far stronger than you may actually be. I'll give you a story. It's a story from the Sikh tradition. You know the Sikhs, they tie their turbans, they are an offshoot of Hindus, and they're all the Kshatriyas. Basically, the Sikh religion was started because one of their gurus, they have 12 gurus, one of their gurus, Guru Gobind Singh, the names are all pretty much Krishna's names in most cases. So Guru Gobind Singh, he recognized that the area of Punjab, which is very much close to Afghanistan and Iran and all that, and there was an onslaught of Mughal kings coming into the Indian subcontinent, and they were taking over land, starting with Alexander and then all the long list of Mughal kings, British, all coming in through that corridor. So he realized that we need warriors. So he created this whole idea of an army of men. And so they have certain principles. They will not cut their hair, they will not shave or cut their hair, they always have to carry a dagger with them, a comb, there's a whole five things that they're supposed to do. And they were the warrior men. Every mother would say, let me have more sons that I can give to the cause. So one time, on the other side of the river, a Muslim king had laid siege. And the next morning he was going to cross the river and attack. So these people had only time for that night to figure out a strategy by which they can thwart the next day's attack. And on their side, they had only 12 warriors. And on the other side, the Muslim king had hundreds and thousands of warriors. Now, how do 12 people stand a massive force of thousands of people? It's already a lost cause. So they have to do something by which they would trick, they had to gamble them, the risk. So Guru Gobind Singh, he came up with a strategy. It's a smart one. He had 6 men stand at night, because you know, at that time you didn't have flashlights, all you had was torches. So he had 6 people stand with torches, and he had the other 6 stand behind him. And every 5 minutes, the 6 from behind would come and stand in the front, and these guys in the front would go back, and then the next row would come back. So 6 here and 6 here, these guys would come in the front, these guys would step back. 5 minutes later, these guys would come in the front, these guys would step back. The whole night, he just kept rotating those 12 soldiers. On the other side of the river, the person who was on guard was watching, and he was shocked because there were so many batches of 6 people throughout the night. He thought there were hundreds and thousands of warriors on the other side. So he went and told the Muslim king, our numbers are too small. They're far too many, because the whole night they've been changing guard, you know, 6 at a time. So many of them are there. I don't think we should attack. And they retreated. So that was the gamble, because you took a risk with a particular strategy or ploy to trick your opponent. So that's the whole game here of gambling, that you are trying to increase your chances of winning. Now, gambling inherently requires some cheating. You cannot not It's not a game where you have to be truthful, like, oh, Nityananda Pran, what cards you got? I got the worst cards, I can't play. And the opponent will take away. So we have to say, I have excellent cards. I have to bluff. And I have to show that I have excellent cards and try to win with that. So Lord Balaram, he was playing a game of dice with Rukmini's brother, Rukmi. It's the story in Krishna book. And Balaram was not such an excellent player, but he loved to play. And every time Lord Balaram was playing with Rukmi, Balaram was winning. So Rukmi, he cheated Balaram to win. So when he played the game of dice and he won, he said, ha 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 ha, Balaram has lost. And he made such a big hue and cry about it. Because he cheated, Lord Balaram knew, this guy's cheated. Picked up his gada and smashed Rukmi's head and killed him on the spot. Because previously Krishna had promised, I will not kill Rukmi. When Krishna was kidnapping Rukmini and going away, Rukmi was in hot pursuit. And he had brought his entire army. And Krishna was ready to finish Rukmi. It won't take much. But Rukmini, who was in the chariot, prayed to Krishna, please, please, he's my brother. Please don't kill him. So Krishna just arrested him and sent him away. But Balaram, he didn't make that promise. So he took his gada and smashed Rukmi's head and killed him. Now, this is Balaram's intolerance of Rukmi's cheating. But when it came to the Mahabharata war, the whole war was staged from the gambling match. The Kauravas were thinking, what should we do to defeat Yudhishthir Maharaj? So one of the things in strategy is you assess the weakness of your opponent and you hit them where it hurts. So they discussed, should we debate with Yudhishthir Maharaj? Psh, no way, he is just too good. What is it that he's not strong in? Well, although he's a Kshatriya and he has the skill, this department is not very strong for him, gambling. So let's call him for a gambling match. And on the side of the Kauravas was Shakuni, their maternal uncle, Gandhari's brother, who not only was an expert at gambling, but he had mystical dice. Those dice were created by the bones of one particular rishi that had mystical potency. That if he said, I want the number 6, that's what he would roll. In that sense, the dice was already determined what number would roll depending on what number he wanted. Imagine, you play a game of dice and you always know what number it's going to cast. So he said, let's call Yudhishthir for playing game of dice. He's not good at it. Alright. So then Prabhupada writes, Kshatriyas are allowed to exhibit this talent in the art of gambling. So Yudhishthir Maharaj was put into a dilemma. Please come and play a game of dice. So many people ask, why, when Prabhupada says we do not engage in gambling, intoxication, meat eating and illicit sex, Yudhishthir Maharaj should also have taken these vows during initiation, right? Then how did he play? How did he gamble? Why did he break this rule? Now the thing was, he's a Kshatriya. So he was put into a situation where we found ourselves previously, I hope, sometime in life, damned if you do and damned if you don't. Anyone be in such a situation in life? If you do something, the outcome is going to be bad. If you don't do that thing, the outcome is going to be bad. So then Yudhishthir Maharaj had to choose. Do you become infamous by not performing your Kshatriya duty, or do you become infamous by performing your duty? And because he is called Dharmaraj, he said, I would rather become infamous by doing my duty, because no one can ever point a finger and say he did not perform his duty. It requires Yudhishthir Maharaj brain. I can't explain the ethics behind it fully, because if someone were to ask me to gamble something like that, I probably would say no, because my own conviction in duty is not as strong as Yudhishthir Maharaj's, so I may not understand his. But for him to wager is a very, very big gamble. But he always followed duty. That's why he's called Dharmaraja. Someone who can go to whatever extent, at the risk of his own life, at the risk of all his possessions, at the risk of everything, at the risk of losing everything, simply to perform his duty. It's a very high standard. And like I said, I don't have the realization to comment on it, because I wouldn't perhaps do that. So he came to gamble, and they wagered with him. So first they wagered his riches, he lost. Then they said, okay, maybe next game you can win it back. Let's wager something else. So he wagered his entire kingdom, he lost that. Then they said, okay, maybe next game you can win it all. Then he wagered again his 5 brothers, he lost all of them. He wagered Draupadi. Now that went to such an extent that everyone else was telling him, what are you doing? What are you doing? Don't do this. This is Draupadi. You cannot wager her. He said, Draupadi. And he lost Draupadi. And when Draupadi was asked to be brought into the assembly, everyone said, oh, no, what are you doing? And Duryodhana said, she needs to sit on my lap. And if she won't come, drag her by her hair and bring her here. And Dushasana dragged her by her hair. And all the great generals, Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Karna, they all kept quiet. They couldn't say anything. And Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, for insulting a woman's hair, all of them had to die. Because of very, very big crime. Abuse of women, children, cows, brahmanas and elderly. There are serious repercussions from it. So the question asked is, why Yudhishthir Maharaj did all this? Then the answer commonly given is, Krishna picks certain persons to teach certain lessons to all of us. If Krishna picked someone very weak and they lost a gambling match and they wagered everything, then it leaves room for saying, hey, if someone more intelligent were there, they would not do this and they would have not found the consequences of gambling. So Krishna picked the most intelligent, the most honest, and one of the most qualified persons to do this gambling match, and showed through him that there cannot be anyone higher than Yudhishthir Maharaj in terms of intelligence, skill, virtuosity. But even if he can face such dire consequences, then who the heck are we to risk such things? Because you have to get the highest example. Because beyond that you can't say, I think I'm more intelligent than Yudhishthir Maharaj, I can risk it. Cannot. So Krishna picked Yudhishthir Maharaj, just as Krishna picked Arjuna. Why Arjuna became disturbed on the battlefield. Why not Nala and Sahadeva, Nakula and Sahadeva? Why not some other king? Because there is no warrior greater than Arjuna. And Krishna took Arjuna's example. Because no one can say, oh, I'm better than Arjuna. So that's Krishna's way of picking the topmost examples and showing through them that these are things we don't do. So then there is a risk that Yudhishthira Maharaj showed by his own life. But for those who like to gamble, Prabhupada says, are Pandavas, and he starts the sentence, by the grace of Krishna, the Pandavas lost everything. Usually grace brings things, right? When there is grace of God, things, abundance, and richness, and all come. Generally, that's the thought. But a devotee sees that whether something is coming or going, it's all Krishna's grace. So Prabhupada writes, by the grace of Krishna, the Pandavas lost everything. And this is the problem with gambling. You lose kingdom, wife, family, home, etc. So we don't play, ideally when we say no gambling, of course it means we don't go to the casinos and wager our money. We don't do that. Because the risk is very clear from Yudhishthira Maharaj's life. But gambling extends beyond that. Because in a casino, you're gambling with money. You may lose money, but at least your life is there. Some people lose to such a degree that their life is at risk, right? There's a standard plot of any movie or drama that you risk so much money, you owe someone so much money that they're on your case and they're threatening you. They will threaten to kill you if you don't return their money. So life is at risk in that sense. But then it's very obvious that when we take our initiation vows and we say no gambling, we're not going to the casino. So what is it that we are saying when we take a vow, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling? What is it that we're saying? What gamble are we going to avoid? It's not just gambling with money, that of course. But the no gambling is two things. One, I will not gamble with life. Because it has taken me many millions of lifetimes to come to the lotus feet of the spiritual master and Krishna. And this one life, I'm not going to gamble with. Okay? So I will stay on the path of Krishna consciousness. I will let my life be guided. Because when one is guided, then the risk of uncertainty becomes very, very small. When one is guided by Krishna, that is Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, when I commit, I will live my life according to the principles of Dharma. I will live my life according to the guidance of Guru and Shastra and Sadhu. That's the vow we're making. I will not gamble by taking a risk of what I need to do in life just based on my own mental speculation of things. Of course, we're also saying, I will not cheat someone. Because gambling breaks the pillar of truthfulness. So I am not going to cheat someone. I will live according to the principles of truth. There are the small t truth and the capital T truth. The small t truth is that in my day-to-day exchanges with people, I will be honest and truthful. If I make a mistake, I made a mistake. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Let me correct it if I can. Let me not do it again if I can, as best as I can. That's an honest in each in communications, honest in dealings with each other, honest in who I am and where I am. That's the small T. And the capital T, living by truth, is that if something the Vedas or the Vedic literature or Prabhupada's teachings say do, then I do. If it says don't do, then I don't do. The phrase that we are familiar with is anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. I will take on and think and act and speak in ways that are favorable for Krishna consciousness and not think, speak and act in ways that are unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. This is the life of truthfulness, or living by not gambling. And if you want a reference for this, back to first canto, in the ninth chapter, Bhishma Dev is about to speak. And the stage is, he's lying down on the bed of arrows, the war has ended. Yudhishthira Maharaj is extremely, extremely morose and suffering severe guilt. The guilt, not just that he, all his brothers and relatives were killed, but the guilt that because of him this war had started. And how is it because of him? Because he gambled. And because he had to become the king, the price at which he became king was too high. And so many people were trying to console him, but he was restless. So Krishna takes him to Bhishma Dev, so Bhishma Dev can speak to him. And Mahabharata has a lot more details of Bhishma Dev's instructions. The Bhagavatam has a very summarized version. As a famous verse, Aho Kashtam, Aho Anyayam. You know that verse? First canto, ninth chapter, forget the verse number. But this phrase is there. Vipra Dharma Achyutashrayaha. So Bhishma Dev tells him, my dear Yudhishthira, you guys have gone through the worst conditions anyone can ever go through. And please don't feel guilty or sad or remorseful, because in all of this, starting from the first step all the way, you were guided by higher principles. You were guided by the Vipras, the expert Brahmanas, who are not only well-versed but established in religiosity. Vipra, Dharma, you've always led your life according to the principles of religion and duty. You've never, never violated your duty. And third, Achyuta, you've always taken the shelter and you've always done as, you've always done the will of Krishna. And that is why, although seemingly you went through tribulations and all sorts of trials and all this bloodshed, still you stand above everyone else as the emblem of truthfulness. So give up this guilt and sadness. So these three principles need to guide us to make sure that we are not straying. We're not straying into the realm of gambling, and we are staying in the middle of the road of truthfulness. Vipra Dharma Achyuta Ashraya. Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Am I guided by teachings of Srila Prabhupada? Am I guided by? It's important. Of course, we make our decisions, but we make our decisions with proper insight. And proper insight is not always accessible to us or available to us on our own strength. So we take guidance. Okay, any comments or questions or thoughts? Subhal Prabhu?
have two questions. Mm-hmm. One is in reference to Srila Prabhupada. I can't remember where, but that frivolous sports, and he just explained, you know, just regular sports, you know, like baseball, football, etc., yeah, etc. They're considered within gambling. And there is, in certain sports here in this country, you bet on sports.
So
that's a clear gamble thing. But I don't think Prabhupada just, you know, put it just for that, but even just engaging in putting your time in watching sports, so that falls into gambling. Just for what you're thinking, you know, what you're explaining about gambling one's life. I guess this one would be gambling one's time.
I think it is more from the point of view of wasting time. I think that's the perspective. We're wasting time.
So that can be anything, you know.
Gambling with life.
Movies, concerts, etc., etc. Anything that
he puts all the way into that category.
Yeah, entertainment type of thing.
Everything
falls into gambling. And the other one.
But then there's the principle of recreation. So any activity in and of itself has to be considered carefully. It's not just the activity. In addition to the activity, there is the consciousness behind the activity. So certain activities are downright because their consciousness behind the activity is different. Like say drinking at a bar. You can't say I'm trying to be Krishna conscious in a bar. It's not possible. It's just not, unless you're there for preaching like Lord Nityananda. But you can't be drinking and preaching. It's not possible. So those are some very obvious ones. But when it comes to other things, it depends also on the consciousness internally. The consciousness internally is why someone is doing that. One is for entertainment or just being frivolous. Versus another could be an investment in health. For some persons, some activity is part of regaining their physical health. It is a way of whatever. There is something else behind. That's also as important. Not just the activity. It may mean that, you know, I could hold a book and just sit there for an hour and not get anything from it. And because others may feel that I should read, I may sit there in front of the book, but I don't get anything from it because my mind is not here. Then I've gambled my life too. Of course, I've touched Prabhupada's book. That's, you know, there's the benefit of that. But have I really gained anything? Others will see me as though I'm reading all the time. So there's also the consciousness behind the activity. And that's the gambling part, because it's the mind with what desire one engages in such activity. So Prabhupada was told, you know that story, your Swamiji prays a lot, he needs to walk. Prabhupada started morning walks as a thing for his health. But Prabhupada's expertise was how he used that while he's regaining his health for some fantastic exchanges or whatever, you know, different things. People are recommended by their doctor or on their own, they understand my body needs this kind of exercise, that activity, this thing, that thing, and maybe done for regaining their health, regaining their energy, whatever, because health is as important. Because if health's not there, nothing else is there. So yes, certain activities, also we need to consider the intention behind. But certain are very obvious, yes.
Yeah, one, just for what you explained, You're thinking, because for many people, one of the things, these things of recreation,
mm-hmm.
recreation is also recommended as part of healthy life.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, it appears, you know, that one have to be regulated. One of the things that it says that one have to regulate is recreation.
Yukta ahara viharas.
Yeah. So people think like that, you know. I mean, I go to this entertainment type of thing to sort of, you know, relax, and it has certain, how you say,
benefits.
Healing in one sense, benefit, you know, that one's, you know, is not engaged in the regular grind things, but you're able to relax. So people do these things like that. And so that's one thing that, you know, everybody thinks about it, you know, at least regular people. And as devotees, we also have to encounter those things. Sometimes
sure.
when, you know, it appears frivolous, but it does have, as you say, the consciousness is, you know, to help, you know, have a sort of a break, you know. So
sure.
how the regulated part.
Okay, so how it gets regulated is whether or not one becomes dependent on that activity for what they're trying to get out of it. That's called, in stronger terms, it's called addiction. In milder terms, it's called dependence. Now I become so dependent on that activity that without it, I can't find any other way of relaxing. That's the flag immediately. That's the flag. Because why do people drink and smoke when the risks are very obvious? Because it relaxes them. It gives them some sedation from the activity of the mind. Basically, these are sedations for the mind, right? Drinking and smoking, they sedate. Because when you're sedated, like, it's less, mind's not like, so some other way of escaping from the situation. But these things, or certain things, come with a risk in it. And although one may innocently enter that area or arena, and they still may be innocent, but those things come with certain risk, and the risk is of dependence. And one becomes dependent on them. And that's not healthy. As long as I was temple president, I knew that my service at many phases became extremely stressful. And one of the ways for me to deal with that stress, which I was not fully aware, and I became aware a little later, but it was a bit late for me, that risk was I would gravitate towards certain kinds of foods because they're very comforting. Fried something, sweet not so much, fried and salty, because for me that would give me some kind of, it's all worth it for this. But that hurt me, because that stress and this kind of, eating habit, I became in one sense dependent, if you will. That would, what I would need. There would be times when I would go home and I would tell Hemangi, make something spicy to eat, because I need that. So that, although it's nice and, you know, simple food, but it was hurting me. That's the dependence I became. And the reflex and the response to that stimulation of whatever stress was, I'm going to eat something nice and I'm having a good time. For example. But I became dependent. Seemingly very innocent, I want to eat something spicy, but behind it was, you know, I want to escape, and I became hooked onto it. That's important for a person to know that whether I'm becoming dependent on that. Because if that's not available, I become restless. Sure. Anyone else has any? Okay. Any, Adam?
It's about business.
Because you're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah, because there's also the same principles, you know, yes, of calculating and gambling, you know, is there.
Sure. But business and itself is not gambling, though. But okay, let's. Yeah. I'd like to hear your question.
The principle, you know, we hear Prabhupada that, you know, a business person can say, you know,
I'm doing
for
it
you, I make no profit. So absolute cheating also, that the truth from the past is not, you know. So how, you know, what also, what is the line that crosses business with gambling in one sense?
First is, to some degree, any business or trade relies on uncertain outcomes. First, that's one. Second, business by nature means for profit. Otherwise, why would you do it? And therefore, not everyone was allowed to do business. Only the Vaishyas were allowed. Kshatriyas don't do. Brahmins don't do. Shudras cannot do. A certain skill mentality is required for that kind of risk. A psychophysical nature is necessary. And then there is honest business and dishonest business. Okay? So taking risk is not a problem. Everyone takes risks. The Brahmins take risk because they are guiding certain people. They don't know if they will follow or not, but they have to give advice. So that's the risk they are taking. The Kshatriyas take risk because they have to fight a war. They assess what they have, how much money they have, whether they can fight the war or not. They're taking risk too. And so are the Vaishyas. Everyone's taking risk. That's okay. But there are certain things you're taking risk where the income is not honest. Gambling is not honest income. Because although you're putting skill in it, it's not considered honest income because the money doesn't come from honest labor. This is one reason why, I should have said it, but most brahmacharis there. For grihasthas, no gambling means that you perform your occupational duty very, very honestly. Many devotees, they go to work and they read Bhagavatam. An hour, 2 hours, they read Bhagavatam. And their work suffers. Or then they say, it's anyway materialistic, I'm not so ambitious. That's wrong. If we are being paid for certain activities, those activities must be done with 100% interest and attention, because that is also seva for Krishna. Otherwise one is gambling. Otherwise one is making a dishonest income by saying, oh, I promised I will work this, but I only work this, but I get paid for this. So business requires risk, no doubt, but not cheating. That's one. Second is the kind of business. There is one business which is just simple trade. The other is gambling on severe uncertainty. Stocks, futures, commodities. You're gambling on severe uncertainties, but what you do is you calculate and find out if there is least risk. But it's all based on calculations, it's not reality. We don't know. So that kind of business is very different. So when we say business, it's not fair to put everything in one box. Within that there is variety. There is this categories of things. Because trade is perfectly okay. Didn't Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita, Vaishya is Krishi Go Raksha Vanijyam. Krishi is farming, Goraksha is cow protection, and Vanijyam. Vanijyam means handling money. Is there? But then you have to consider what kind of business. That's one. Second, has the superior authorities given their blessing? Is that okay to do or not okay to do? In some cases, they may say it's too risky, don't do it. They don't do it. Like that. So we have to assess beyond just the initial level to the specificity of that business, that person, and their own character and nature. If the person is not genuinely honest, then that business, then they're dealing with risk. For a short-term profit, one may mess up a long-term relationship. Like that. Plus, are they violating other principles by the name of business? You know, so engaging in a business that is making money out of uncertainty in the future has certain risks. You know, your entire stock market, for example, I don't know, for some reason picking on the stock market, how much ever wonderful the stocks are doing, there is always a line at the bottom. And most people don't read it. It's like a statutory claim on a cigarette packet. Past performance of stock does not guarantee future performance. It's their way of relieving themselves of that risk that we, or I, as a investor, is putting in it. Because stock market can go up and down anyway. Although people do all these modeling and say, oh, this is what we're predicting, they say that a monkey can pick stocks as well as anyone can. Because it is so random. You never know. You may pick a company that is doing fantastic. Overnight, they can be done. And there's so many examples like that. In India, there was one company called Satyam Computers. Those guys rose to fame like anything. And they are India's second largest software company. But the guy sitting at the head, he messed around with the stock values and this something, I forget the details of what he did. Next day, there was no Satyam Computers. People had invested millions and millions, and people had just small amounts, lost everything. And who's going to say, I will compensate you for it? No one, because people are told, it's the risk you've taken. So, that's what you get. America's many companies like that. Famous guy in New York, he floated this something called Ponzi scheme. His name was Madoff. Right? Do you remember the name? Madoff. I forget exactly what a Ponzi scheme works, but basically it's making money out of cheating people. He made billions of dollars. When they caught him, overnight he went to jail. That's it. Everyone who had invested in those, lost. Etc. So one should not just say business, but what kind of business? What are the risks in the kind of business? What other principles are there? And who's doing it? Like that. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.